are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Life is complete. I've sniped the great Justin Mason on two picks. Be in our three-sport draft and die a happy man.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Literally starting to think about divine intervention. We have a pastor in the league, and I'm asking him to pray for my team, even though he's my competition, so...
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
And if I had to like preface every rant that you make on this podcast, I'd pretty much have to do it about four or five times an episode. So let's be honest there.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Chuck Anderson. Chuck, how you doing?
I am doing wonderful. My life is complete. I've sniped the great Justin Mason on two picks already in our three-sport draft. I can die a happy man.
Yes, yeah, this three-sport draft that I'm that we're in is not going as planned for me. So
I had a feeling your base plan does not seem to be what you've drafted. So yes. I had kind of a feeling that that's what was going on.
it is getting to the point where I am literally starting to think about divine intervention. We have a pastor in the league, and I'm asking him to pray for my team, even though he's my competition. So. And joining us today is a special guest. It is Jeff Zimmerman of FanGraphs, RotoWire, a bunch of different places. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on today.
Thank you for coming on. Jeff, can you tell people a little bit about yourself, where you write and talk for, and then where you can reach on social media?
Yeah, right now I've kind of cut down. I used to be about everywhere, but I'm kind of just writing for RotoGraphs. And I'm getting about ready to start up with RotoWire. But that is just it. I'm doing a small article for Baseball America. But it's kind of nice just to concentrate and not be all over the place. I know a lot of writers have to piece together whatever they can.
Yeah, and I'm one of those guys. So that is nice to be able to cut back a little bit. But you're one of the authors out there that I tend to cite a lot of their work. So I'm really appreciative of you coming on. And you can follow Jeff on Twitter at Jeff W. Zimmerman. Is that correct?
Yes, I had to throw my middle initial in there. Sorry about that, but that was just Jeff Zimmerman was taken. So,
all right. Well, let's jump into some fantasy baseball talk for today. The trade deadline is approaching slowly but surely, and through a lot of the rumors, we actually had a trade last night. And that was Eduardo Nunez being traded to the Red Sox from the San Francisco Giants, from my San Francisco Giants. So, Jeff, what are your thoughts on Nunez now in Boston?
I think the move is great for Boston. They kind of have a guy that can play anywhere on the field. So far this season, I think short, third, and left field. So if someone goes down, they can put in a good average major leaguer. On the fantasy side, though, it's going to be a little bit tough. Who's going to lose the plate appearances? I think that looking around, I think Nunez is probably just going right now, just slot in on off days and kind of move himself around and give everyone a break. Or I could also see a case where Mitch Moreland may get moved off of first, or he could be the one that loses a lot of time and Hanley would take over at first. But it's tough to tell right now how it's all going to work out. And with Nunez's ability to play any position, if someone gets hurt, he can slot in and be a good backup. So I don't know. It might be a good time to buy low if people are freaking out, but sometimes it just seems to work out.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Nunez in Boston?
Well, he's 30 years old. He's certainly been a reserve in the past because he spent a lot of his time in New York and Minnesota as a reserve. He's hitting .308 with 18 stolen bases and 4 home runs this year. He really doesn't have platoon splits, even though he hasn't homered off a left-handed pitcher this year. he's having kind of an interesting year because his K rate and his walk rate is down. You know, I saw Devers last night, and I watched his game pretty closely, and he certainly did not look overmatched, and he certainly did not look like the moment was too big for him, meaning that he looked really smooth defensively. His at-bats looked really solid, even though it wasn't a result-filled game, obviously, for him. So I'm of the same school as Jeff. I think Mitch Moreland is the one that needs to be lose the playing time here. I'm not sure if they'll do that, being sort of a veteran-oriented team or not. But, you know, when you look at Travis Shaw's home run numbers as a left-handed hitter outside of Fenway, and what he did in Fenway, and then you look at Moreland and what he did outside of Fenway and what he's done in Fenway, boy, it's a tough place for left-handed hitters to pull hitters to hit home runs. That certainly seems like the case anyway. So there's some usefulness here. I like this move for the Red Sox as much as Mr. Zimmerman said, because, you know, you got areas of need and help. You don't know exactly what you're going to get out of Hanley Ramirez from day to day. You've had troubles in left field. You know, it just gives you so much backup. So it's a great baseball move, but fantasy wise, I'm a little concerned. I can't believe they're going to call up Devers for a day or two and then send him down. I got to believe that Devers is going to get a serious look here. So the playing time over the next week and a half could be a little dicey. Kind of what we see out of Hernan Perez in Milwaukee is how I see it.
Well, I was hoping either you could enlighten me and give me a little bit more clarity, because I'm a little bit confused on how the playing time is going to shake out as well. Like you guys mentioned, Devers is up, and that it means that Nunez can't just necessarily slot right in into a full-time role over at third base, or won't most likely. I think he could platoon with Devers over there at third and then fill in over around the diamond in left, in right, in it's short if Bogarts, who's struggled a little bit as of late, needs a breather. I would agree, and one of my thoughts was that maybe Moreland is kind of the odd man out, but it seems that the Red Sox are a tad bit reluctant to move Devers over to play first or play him at DH. I think they want to play him at third every day for the most part. And I think maybe the one piece of information that was a little bit illuminating is in the press release that the Red Sox released last night announcing the trade. They called Eduardo Nunez a utility player, and I think that's what he kind of becomes for the Red Sox. And though, like Jeff mentioned, those things kind of tend to sometimes work themselves out via injury or poor performance. He could find himself with a number of at-bats. The park is an upgrade for sure. The lineup is an upgrade for sure. So I'd be willing to take a gamble on Eduardo Nunez at least keeps somewhat of the same level of playing time going forward.
And lest we forget that they've lost five games in a row, which, of course, is an issue as far as they might still be searching for exactly what lineup they like as well. So maybe that helps him find playing time.
Let's also not forget that Dave Dombrowski likes to trade and likes to make big moves, and they may not be done.
That's very true as well, my friend.
All right, let's move on and talk about Nick Williams, who is starting off his career extremely hot. He was kind of a top prospect a couple years ago, fell on hard times, fell down prospect lists, but is really been red hot since coming up to the major leagues. So, Jeff, what are your thoughts on Nick Williams?
I think he's doing kind of what we expected of him. It kind of is in line with his minor league numbers. He's kind of been around a 300 hitter in the minors, and that's what he's doing now. He's not showing – he's showing maybe a little bit more power, but I would kind of put him at maybe a 20 home run guy, maybe, you know, 8 to 10 steals, maybe a little bit less than that. But I'm not completely surprised. He's been a high BABIP guy. I mean, his makeup is he's kind of a free swinger. He doesn't walk a ton. He doesn't strike out a ton. You know, makes a lot of contact and has a little bit of speed to kind of put that to use. I don't see how he's going to be like a top 25 hitter, but I think he's got some usage. He's further down and just can give you production across the board.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Williams?
Well, I was a little taken aback when I looked at some of his minor league numbers. I mean, his 7.1% walk rate right now is the highest walk rate of his career at any minor league stop, which is not great. And he is definitely does qualify as a contact hitter, like Jeff said. I don't see a huge amount of upside here. I see him as a back end outfielder moving forward into next year. I mean, he's not going to get a whole lot of lineup support, obviously. And just the profile that he brings, you know, everyone was so down on the Phillies in general, their minor league system. And I think maybe this is one of the reasons that Nick Williams had taken a step back. Obviously, their young shortstop has taken a step back that, you know, that we keep hearing about for years and much ado about nothing. But I mean, I do think he's a useful back end guy with some upside because he's only 23. I do struggle sometimes in us trying to project minor league numbers from kids when they're, you know, 19, 20, 21 years old. It's kind of hard to tell exactly because they haven't really fully matured yet. If they go on a traditional performance arc where they start getting better towards age 27. But I think in the near future, I don't think Nick Williams is someone I'm going to reach for in drafts.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to buy into him either. I mean, right now he's only striking out at a 23.8% clip, which is about 5.5% less than he was doing at the AAA level. So I think there are some kind of harder times to come. Both Zips and Steamer and depth charts all project him to be more of about a 250 hitter, which to me would say that, or would point to the fact that I think the 303 average right now is quite a bit inflated. I think he's got talent, and I think he could be a decent power-speed combo, especially if the Phillies let him run at the major league level, even though he's, you know, right now he's 0-for-2 in stolen bases. But I think he's one of those guys that is probably going to struggle at times with strikeouts, and that could be a little bit disastrous for him staying up at the major league level. Right now, I think you ride him while he's hot. If you're in a deep enough league, I think a 15-team league, he's probably worth rostering. But I think long term, I think this is a guy that could be up and down kind of next year in terms of his work at the major league level. All right, let's talk about Felix Hernandez, because King Felix is had kind of a uneven season so far this year. And so I want to check in and see how people are feeling about him. I actually saw a post, people wondering if he was a Hall of Fame player. And I don't quite buy that yet. But Chuck, what are your thoughts on King Felix's season so far?
Well, it's obviously been a velocity transition. It's been a lot of what people have been talking about because his velocity has wavered in recent years. And he did have a very heavy workload at a young age. He's owed $54 million through 2019. He does have a John Lackey clause in his contract that if he misses, I believe it's 120 games because of an elbow injury, that he will pitch in 2020 for just $1 million, which is something we saw John Lackey go through. It's kind of curious. I'm not an expert on these things, but his FIP is 4.9 and his XFIP is 3.8. I don't think I recall seeing quite as much of a gulf between those two things. He's suffering through a spike in his home run to fly ball percentage this year, all the way up to 23.3%. And, you know, I'm not a veteran of those numbers per se, but that seems like one of the biggest numbers I've seen, especially for somebody who plays in such a spacious park as he does. And 1.8 home runs per nine is the highest rate that he's ever had in his career. So I think he's learning how to pitch with less velocity. But the natural comparison of him to Justin Verlander doesn't work in one way, because Verlander went from elite velocity to decent velocity. And in this day and age, I think that Felix Hernandez's velocity is kind of borderline. I mean, when you get around that 90 miles an hour That's just not normal now. He needs to be especially crafty, and he's learning how to do it. The last night I watched him pitch, he was good through the, you know, through the first five innings, and then really started to struggle. So I think there's something here yet, but I think his name recognition is going to make him overdrafted in these next couple of years, because I don't think the version of King Felix that we saw 3 or 4 years ago is on its way to coming back anytime soon.
Jeff, what are your thoughts on Felix?
It really comes down to the home runs he's given up. If you look at his strikeouts and walks, it's even comparable to around his Cy Young years when he had ERAs around 2.5. He's striking out about 8.5 batters per nine, which is what he did almost from 2008 to 2012. He's walking less than 2.5 batters per nine. It's what he did during that time. It was just during that time he was allowing a less than one home run per nine, and he's almost tripled that rate right now. So it really comes down to how much a person thinks this home run spike is from his talent drop, or if it's from just bad luck right now. And like I said, it's really kind of tough to tell. But depending on the league, he may be someone I would take a chance on here at the end of the year, because maybe he'll have allow less than one home run per nine, and you probably won't have to pay much for him because his owners might be a little bit leery about some of the stats with him, where he's got the, close to 5 FIP and doing everything. But even in my 15-team tout league, his ERA of 4.8 is better than, it would improve most of the league. I mean, the median ERA is around 4.12, so I mean, he's a usable pitcher in probably most leagues. It's just maybe owners kind of expect more, or maybe they expected less, but I think he's kind of producing what he is. It's just going to come down to what those home runs or that number ends up.
Yeah, I've been pretty scared of Felix since remember when he signed his contract and they did the MRI and they found something that they then renegotiated the contract over. I've been pretty scared of Felix since then, and so I haven't had shares in a very long time of Felix Hernandez, and that was a foolish decision early on in the contract, because his first year out of that gate, first 2 years out of that gate, he was pretty good. This year he has been, like I mentioned in the introduction of it, a little bit uneven. He's not getting the same amount of ground balls. And he's given up a home run to fly ball rate that is a little over double his career rate. And so I think there is a little bit of flukiness. I also think maybe there is a little bit of a poor placement, and that's probably why he's not giving up as many ground balls, giving up a few too many home runs. So I actually think he can improve. I'm just not a Felix guy, because I just don't trust the elbow, and he's already been on the DL once this year, and I worry that he isn't a guy that is going to stay healthy long term. So I'm out on Felix Hernandez, but I do understand people wanting to buy him right now. Let's move over and talk about Jonathan Scope. He's a guy that I was on a show last night, the Fantrax baseball show, and he was a guy that was brought up as a guy that is not talked about enough within the industry. So, Jeff, I'm interested. What are your thoughts on Jonathan Scope?
Truthfully, it kind of comes down to if you're in an average versus on-base percentage league on how much you like him. Because, I mean, coming into this year, his walk rate was around 3%. I mean, his career is 3.5, and this year he's got a 5.2. So he really didn't have that, but he always kind of put up at least a respectable average. And he was, good double-digit home runs. And since the juice ball era, he's kind of got an extra 10 per year. So that's good. I think he's a usable second baseman. I think people are happy with him. I think his value really jumps in an average league because he just does not walk. I mean, you get a second baseman that can give you 20 home runs, he really is going to give you no stolen bases. I mean, he has 5 in his career so far. So, I mean, you can't expect anything there. Because you're getting home runs on average, and depending on your needs for your team, that may be what you need to go for.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Scope?
Well, I think Zimmer, I think Jeff gets at a lot of the point here that, you know, you almost have to build your team untraditionally if you have him at second base. But I do like a lot of the trends that I see here. 25 years old, he cut down on his Ks last year, like 3%, and he's held on to that cutback and added 3% to his walk rate this year, which his walk rate is still very low at 5.2%, but it's still a step in the right direction. You know, he's pulling the ball more. His fly ball percentage is up 2% as well. He does have a 340 BABIP this year, which you wonder if maybe just even a little bit more of the plate discipline that we've seen is what's helping him. He's kind of what we hoped Rougned Odor would do in the last year or so, is in so much as just show a little bit more patience and maybe you get better pitches to hit. He might also be taking advantage of the fact that the Orioles have been kind of dreadful. So they've been behind in a lot of games. So maybe that gives you some extra pitches to hit because you're not in as tight of situations or you're not facing elite relievers when the game is sort of getting out of hand. But I like Jonathan Scope. I just think you have to build your team in a certain way around him because, like Jeff said, you're not going to get stolen bases and you're not going to get on base percentage from him. But getting, you know, he's well on his way to career highs in home runs and RBIs this year, which the home runs are no big deal. But the RBI might be a sign that maybe they're willing to put him in a better situation in the lineup. So I like Jonathan Scope going forward as a guy that's not going to be drafted overly high, I don't think. But he gives you quite a bit of bang for the buck.
Yeah, I'm a big Jonathan Scope fan. My Rotographs bold predictions coming into 2016, I predicted he'd hit 30 home runs that year, and it appears I was just a year early. He's hit his looks like he's hit his 22nd today already, and still sustaining a .303 average. I think the average is coming down. I just don't buy him being a 300 hitter. I think he's more along the lines of a 275, 280 guy. And so I think there's going to be a little bit of regression in that department. But considering where you got him, most likely got him outside of the top 120 to 150 picks, you've got to be pretty happy with the level of production. And I know you mentioned, Chuck, this is a guy that you've kind of got a plan around. But I think this is the kind of guy that fits into a lot of people's drafting plans nowadays because everybody is grabbing speed earlier and then trying to fill in a little bit extra power late. And I think Scope is one of those guys that fits perfectly in. And I just don't think he's getting the respect he deserves within the fantasy industry. He's currently, or at least as of last night, he was like the number 6 second baseman on the ESPN Player Rater. He's been about a top 50 to 75 player this year, and I don't think people are really necessarily giving him the credit he deserves. So I think Scope is a guy that you might be able to fairly reasonably obtain. You're definitely going to have to pay more than you did on people did on draft day, but I think he's a guy you could go after the rest of the season that can offer you some extra pop from the middle infield position if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, the one thing I did notice is he is not swinging nearly as much this year, and it might be part of it. It's a 10 percentage point drop. He was swinging around 60% than previous seasons, and this year he's down to 51. So that might be part of it. It's just being a little bit more disciplined at the plate, and he's still able to make the contact. So I actually kind of buy it a little bit more that he's making some positive change, just kind of looking at some of the underlying numbers there.
All right. Let's talk about Lance McCullers, who's going through a bit of a cold streak. We've talked about him quite a bit earlier in the year as he was really just absolutely mowing down the competition. And I proclaimed at that point that I felt like as long as he was healthy, I thought he was a top 10 to 15 pitcher. So this little streak where he is put up kind of some subpar outings, he's not gone over 5 1/3 since June 8th. In the last 4 starts, he's given up at least 3 earned runs, and he's not striking out as many guys. Jeff, are you worried about Lance McCullers?
Yeah, the strikeout rate is halved so far in the month of July. It's tough to like put a finger on it, but it's one of those deals where it's like, oh, there's might just be a problem, and he's hiding an injury that we're not finding, or, you know, we're not being told about. So I'd be a little bit worried with him. I know he's missed a little bit of time. He's kind of been injury prone. It would not be surprised one bit. I think most McCullers owners came into the season knowing he's going to miss a quarter to a third of the season. He's not been able to throw over 125 innings in a season. And I think if owners thought they were going to get, you know, 200 innings of this great production out of him, I think they're kind of being delusional. He's going to give you production, but you're just going to have to replace him at some point during the season.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on McCullers?
Justin, I'm surprised you weren't proclaiming that a rant was forthcoming, because I have been the anti-McCullers for the last 2 years, and it's just – it's always something. It's injuries. It's short outings. And it's not so much that – it's not so much that I don't think he does have value, because he certainly does. It's that someone in all of my leagues – and this might just be my drafting experience — somebody has this idea that they're just going to cash it in because he's got these extreme, you know, all this extreme ability. And he does, but there's always something wrong. You know, he never pitches anywhere close to a full season, like Jeff mentioned. You know, he's got the lowest FIP and XFIP of his career, but he's got a 3.68 ERA. You know, he's also walked over 3.38 batters per nine in each of his last four starts. Whenever you think you have something for sure with him, that's when you don't have it. And people should just get used to it. But there will be somebody again next year that they're going to cash in, and they're going to take him, like you said, as a top 10 or top 15 starter, and they can just go right at it. It's all theirs, because I am so sick of everyone acting like he's about to win a Cy Young when he cannot get out of his own way despite his supreme ability. He is perhaps the most overrated name in all of fantasy baseball, because you say — wow — his name and everybody goes, ooh, ah, ooh, ah. Yeah, how many titles have you won with him? He has done nothing for you except for four or five game stretches, and those were five-inning starts. Get over it.
He's also only pitched like 200 innings coming into this year, so maybe 300 innings at the major league level. So, I mean, he's extremely young, Chuck. And if I had to like preface every rant that you make on this podcast, I'd pretty much have to do it about four or five times an episode. So let's be honest there. And you know what? I will be the sucker that goes back to the well next year. I'm the sucker who's going back to the well right now. I think this is just a little bit of a cold streak. I haven't necessarily seen anything that tells me his mechanics are off, and I think McCullers has pretty decent mechanics to begin with. Over the course of this kind of cold streak, his last five starts, he's got a .436 BABIP. I think he's getting a little bit unlucky with in the BABIP department, in the left on base percentage department. I think that this is a guy that relies on his defense quite a bit, especially with this really high ground ball rate. I think his defense has let him down a little bit as of late. I think also that the Astros are being a little bit cautious with him. So when he gives up some runs early, they're not letting him pitch through it. So I think the Astros having been very cautious with him right now and in the past. If they felt there was an injury, they would put him on the DL right away. I mean, we've seen this with him earlier in the season when he did go on the DL. We've seen it with Keuchel. The Astros have a very large lead in the West. They are protecting it, and they are not going to mess around with these starters if they feel like these guys are hurt. They're going to put them on the DL and use that 10-day DL to their advantage. And so the fact that he is still pitching through this tells me that the Astros aren't as worried, which makes me not as worried. I think this represents a buy low opportunity if people are starting to jump off the bandwagon, because I know with the questions I've gotten on Twitter, people are starting to get a little bit afraid. So I'm looking to buy right now. All right, let's move on and talk about Mike Moustakas, who is just continuing to hit the cover off the ball. And with the recent move of the Royals It appears he will not be leaving Kauffman Stadium anytime soon because the Royals appear to want to try to make a run at it this year. So, Chuck, what are your thoughts on Mike Moustakas?
I have been one of the biggest bolsters of Moustakas this year. He's hitting 275 with a 255 BABIP. You know, and in today's game, his 16.4% strikeout rate is not all that high, considering he does take some walks. You know, he's got 29 home runs, and this is walk year, as you mentioned. He does have a career low 4.2% base on ball rate, so some people would say he's sort of trading stuff off. I think the Boston Red Sox and the Yankees are still going to be sort of in the market potentially for longtime third baseman options, and I think he's going to make a ton of money. I got into a bet on the other podcast that I do for FWFB, and I took Mike Moustakas' production this year over Nick Castellanos, and that looks pretty good right now. Third base, I would love to be a free agent third baseman right now that can do the kind of damage that he's showing he can do. And I think, you know, he's in the middle of his career. I think he is also can join Jonathan Scope as one of the more underrated players in the game right now.
Jeff, what are your thoughts on Moustakas?
Yeah, he's definitely, I've always wanted to study this, and it just has so many moving parts where he has just decided to swing a lot more. He's going to make less contact. I mean, his swing percentage is up 15 percentage points. His contact rate's down. You kind of see that with his strikeout and walk rate. His, you know, walks are way down, but his strikeouts are up. But he's getting just the extra power in the home runs. And he kind of showed it last year where he had 7 home runs in about a sixth of the season, which would have, you know, worked out to, let me try to do some math here, 42 home runs, which is kind of about where he's looking at possibly right now. So I think the change happened last year, and I'm not for sure if it, how much help he's getting from the juice ball, if it's just pushing the ball a little bit out of Kauffman Stadium, that it's a stadium that might have gotten an advantage over just getting an extra 5% more that they're getting the home runs. But I think he's just making the trade off. And right now he's just, yeah, he looks like a great player, and he was, people got him for nothing on draft day. He was almost a buy thought. He was, had the injury last year. I think a lot of people were scared away from it. It's really not a reason to be afraid. And so, like I said, his home run to fly ball rate this year is around 20%, and last year was 19%. So I think the jump started earlier. Just too bad he got hurt, and he's just knocking the ball out. And sadly, more for like the history of the franchise, he's probably going to break the Royals' home run record this year.
Yeah, he looks like he was. This is kind of what we thought Moustakas was going to be when he was taken second overall by them in 2007, as I think like an 18-year-old. I think I was huge on him when he was coming up and kind of went back to the well year after year after year. It seems like ever since I joined Rotographs, I caught a little bit of Paul Spohr and Jason Collette syndrome, which means being a little bit or a year too early on a player, because I was all over Moustakas every year. And then this is the year I tempered my expectations on him. And, of course, this is the year that he has appeared to go off. He's walking a little bit less, which, you know, you don't necessarily want to see. So he's kind of been a negative in the OBP department, in spite of the fact that he is hitting 275. He has some flaws to his game, and I do think that there may be some sustained slumps coming up. But at this point, you've got to be really happy with what you've gotten from him. He's, you know, almost giving you 30 home runs at this point in the season. He seems like a pretty good lock for 35 to 40 for the season. And he'll be an interesting guy in free agency, because if he can end up in a place like New York, that would bode really, really well for him and his future. So I do like Mike Moustakas moving forward. Let's talk about another third baseman, one that Chuck just mentioned a little bit, and that's Jose Ramirez, who's having a fantastic year. And Chuck, you'd wanted to talk about him, so give me your thoughts on Jose Ramirez.
Jose Ramirez, just 24 years old. I always mentally put him in my head with a player who's not very similar to him, except in the fact that they've acquired a bigger role than anyone thought, and that's Rougned Odor. Because when Jose Ramirez was up, everyone thought he was a placeholder for Francisco Lindor. And when Rougned Odor was up, he was just a placeholder for Jerks and Profar. And the point is that these two players have turned out to be a lot more than that. Ramirez offers positional flexibility and the availability to play all over the diamond, which I think can help his value long-term, not just this year and next. Looks like next year will be third base and second base eligibility with Kipnis's injury, injury-filled season this year. Five intentional walks this year and never had one in the bigs before this year. So I think you can announce that he's gained the respect of the oppositions. He's got 11.3% for a K rate and 8.3% for a walk rate. So they're almost the same, which is a pretty nice statistic to have. And if you look at his batted ball profile, he's hitting a lot more balls either up the middle or to left field. So he's definitely been pulling the ball more when he's as a right-handed hitter. So I love Jose Ramirez. I think he's vastly underrated. And he was a hell of a value this year in drafts.
Jeff, what are your thoughts on Ramirez?
I think he's going to be intriguing going forward. I didn't really expect – I kind of expected his home run and stolen base numbers to be swapped. I mean, that was kind of the numbers he would put up is, you know, last year was like 11 home runs and 22 stolen bases. And this year it's got the more home runs but less stolen bases. But he's – that – the multi-categories is just huge. I mean, he's putting up the 320 average with on-base percentage near 380 right now, giving you double-digit home runs and stolen bases. I had actually went and run – I constantly run projections during the season off the fan graphs. They run ones where it's the depth charts, which is the combination of what they've done this year and so forth. And he's looking to be like a top 20 hitter – maybe in top 15 last year. Right now, the projections have him better just below Chris Bryant and above Manny Machado. So it's going to be interesting to see how he gets valued next year if he's able to do the 25 home runs, 10 to 15 steals. I mean, he's not a Mookie Betts, but he's going to put up those type of numbers that people like where you can just get him and not have to go find home runs later or stolen bases later. He gives you the combination of both. And like I said, I think it'll be interesting to see where he ends up. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Charlie Blackmon in that regard, where he kind of gives you – he's not great in any category, but he gives you enough of each one to really help your overall team.
I think that is a really great comp, that he is kind of like a Charlie Blackmon-esque player. That has multi-positional eligibility, can play second, play third. He should retain both of those coming into next season. I was just in a 2018 mock draft a couple weeks ago, where I famously took Clayton Kershaw, and then, of course, Kershaw gets hurt. But Jose Ramirez went – I was expecting to try to grab him with my second or third round pick, because I was at the top of the draft, and so I figure I'd wrap around and grab him in second, late second, early third. He went, let's see, 18th overall. So I think this was the last year you're getting Jose Ramirez at a discount, and I think it's well deserved. I don't necessarily know if I could pull the trigger that high coming into next season, if he's going to be a high second round pick for me, but I can see the argument for it. He plays on one of the best offenses in baseball in Cleveland that should be just as good next year. So the counting stats around him are going to be very good. I think we've seen that this high average and OBP are sustainable this year. Hitting for more power, he still has the speed. I think there's not much not to like about Jose Ramirez, and I think he is going to become a very hot commodity in fantasy. And like I said, I don't think you'll get a discount anymore. I think you're going to have to use a late second-round pick. And I think there's going to be some people talking about him as a late first-round pick next year.
Yeah, it really, like you said, he falls into Charlie Blackmon, where he wasn't really brought up. You know, he wasn't the prospect that we all wanted. And I could see some people back off just a little bit. So I think his range of values is going to be huge in the industry and among drafts. And like I said, I think it's one of the more interesting things to kind of follow going into next season.
Yeah, big shout out to a friend of the podcast in our one of our co-workers and cohorts over at FanGraphs, Rotographs. Was Alex Chamberlain, because Chamberlain was a huge Jose Ramirez guy coming into last season and really kind of put his name out there, and I think doesn't get enough credit for pumping him as much as he did. So let's talk about another guy who has emerged this season and been a guy that I keep detracting, and he keeps shoving it right back in my face. So, Jeff, what are your thoughts on Chris Taylor?
I'm not buying it one bit, but I'm kind of where you're at, where it just keeps coming back to bite me. No one hits, you know, with a 426 BABIP. Like, the average, the hits and the production that comes from almost, I mean, that high of BABIP is just going to have to come down. And, I mean, he's striking out 30% of the time nearly. If he, for the rest of the season, hit 50 points less, I wouldn't be surprised, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was even more. So I think that aspect, I think the average and on-base percentage, I think people are going to have to hold in check. The home runs and stolen bases don't surprise me as much. He's hit for some power in the minors. We've kind of got a live ball, so that's going. He's always stolen bases, definitely in the minors. I'm kind of wondering if next year we're going to see the home runs might be going up as he ages, gets in his 27 season, and the stolen bases start dying off. But right now, they're each even at 12. Like I said, the only thing I just don't buy right now is the high average, and that's all based off that 426 BABIP. I mean, no one has finished with over a 400 BABIP. I can't remember for how many years, and especially that high. So I just expect some heavy regression happening.
All right, Chuck, I know you're going to do a happy dance while you talk, so go ahead.
I'm really not. I'm not really the world's hugest Dodger fan. And the fact that they're getting, you know, the ridiculous year that they're getting from Alex Wood, the ridiculous year, and we knew that he was going to be a good player, but maybe not this fast, from Cody Bellinger. And this Chris Taylor thing is just crazy. 26 years old. You know, he's already acquired second base and outfield eligibility for next year. While he did show some power in the minors, he only had one home run at the major league level before the 12 that he's got this year. That 27% strikeout rate just does not fit the profile at all for, you know, the size hitter that he is, for, you know, somebody that was not projected to be a power hitter, you know, big time over. And this 426 BABIP that Jeff referred to is pure insanity. If somebody told me that they wanted to quit fantasy baseball for the rest of their life because of Chris Taylor breaking the model of what we think is supposed to happen in the world, I'm not exactly sure that I would blame them. You know, the person who picks up a guy who's hot and you say, well, look at his history. There's no way that any of this looks like it could happen. And then, like, now he goes on a run and does it for, what, 3.5 months? I mean, I understand anyone's frustration that they feel with Chris Taylor. And while I'm not going to be afraid to take a chance on him in the middle of drafts next year, if somebody wants to think that this is who Chris Taylor is going forward, I have no problem letting them pay that kind of a price to acquire him.
Yeah, I mean, this is not who Chris Taylor is, and I will go to my grave talking smack about this guy and yelling that there will be regression coming. And we've talked about him a number of times on this podcast over the course of this season, because he keeps hitting and he keeps staying hot, and I keep looking silly, and at some point, you want to jump off the bandwagon, but I just can't do it yet. I mean, he's never really shown this level of power before. I mean, we are in kind of a juiced ball era, and maybe that's why we're seeing it. But he was supposed, coming up through the Mariner system, he was supposed to be kind of a defense-first guy that could steal a number of bags to be interesting in, like, an AL-only league. He was never supposed to be a guy that would hit for this kind of average, for this kind of power. Like Jeff mentioned, his BABIP is absolutely insane. 426 BABIP. I wouldn't be surprised to see his average crater at some point. I'm going to expect that it will. If you got him on your team, I mean, I guess you could try to sell, but I think a lot of people would kind of see that coming as your traditional kind of sell high. So you probably just want to just run it out as long as could. I mean, he's in a very good lineup in Dodger Stadium. He is, you know, hot right now. So, I mean, I guess you just ride it as, you know, as long as you can, because I don't think anybody is going to give you anything of extreme value for a guy like Chris Taylor, unless there is a believer in your league. So, I mean, I guess shop him around and see what you can get. But I would be surprised to see him hit 275 rest of the way. And so far he's hitting 50 points higher. So, yeah, I'm definitely banking on some major regression coming his way.
Well, I remember when the season started, when Avisail Garcia was hitting, and I can go look up the comments. Everyone's like, mm-hmm. Oh, he can keep it up. He's changed. And I mean, he had the 368 average and like a 443 BABIP. And this last month he hit 216. So I don't know if he'll get down to 216 Taylor, but no one just maintains his BABIP. It just doesn't happen. And the regression will come. I'm kind of wondering if I wasn't his owner, but maybe ask to see if his owner is looking to sell high. And if you need some, just need a hitter with some position eligibility, maybe they'll sell low because they probably didn't pay much for him. And if they get anything from him, I don't know if I would for sure do that, but it might be something that someone could explore, is just go the complete opposite route and see how his owner does value him.
Yeah, I think with the amount of stats that an owner's already banked, that I think that'd be difficult to get him on the cheap. But you never know, because like I said, I mean, if I was Chris Taylor's owner right now in a fantasy league, which I'm not, I do not have any shares of, I've got, I think, 17 leagues this year and no shares of Chris Taylor, I would be trying to take anything I could get right now. So especially, you know, at a different position if I was okay up the middle. So it's definitely something worth exploring. Let's talk about Lucas Duda, who's actually been an interesting name in trade rumors. And there is some talk that he could potentially end up with the Yankees now that Justin Bour is on the DL, because that was the big rumor earlier. So he is he's having a, you know, kind of Lucas Duda-ish season, but has been okay as of late. So, Jeff, what are your thoughts on Lucas Duda?
I think, one, his production's what he's always done. He's got a few more home runs, but, I mean, he's batting 245, and his career average is 246. I mean, his on-base percentage is 345. His career is 343. He's kind of doing what we've always expected from him. It's just amazing how little offense the Mets have around him, where he has 17 home runs and only scored 30 times. It's like you just expect his counting stats to be so much better with someone with 17 home runs. I don't know how that compares, you know, those numbers for others, but it's just ridiculously low. I mean, I'm sure his owners are kind of frustrating seeing those type of numbers from him, but I think the trade would be great. I think getting out of there would really help his value. He is what he is. He's going to have a low average. He walks at an okay amount, a decent amount, around 10%, and doesn't strike out a ton. So he's just a home run play is pretty much where he's at for him. And you'd kind of hope he'd have some more counting stats, but they're just not showing up, the runs and RBIs this year.
Yeah, he's kind of taken over the role that Curtis Granderson had on the team last year, when Granderson hit 13 home runs and only had 37 RBIs and 46 runs scored. There's no help on that lineup, which, you know, sad for Mets fans, but I don't think this was necessarily unforeseen coming into the year. Duda would be a really interesting left-hand because he's a left-handed bat if he does end up in Yankee Stadium. But of course, the big rumor right now is the Yankees are attempting to acquire Sonny Gray along with Alonso. So if that happens, obviously they wouldn't need a guy like Lucas Duda, but Lucas Duda could come on the cheap for the Yankees. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Duda so far?
Well, I certainly agree with everything that you guys have said. The one thing I would mention is that he spent a lot of his time being portrayed and being a platoon hitter when he was in New York. And the point of the matter is this year, either through injury or what have you, they have not been able to platoon him as much. He's got 37 games against left-handed pitching this year, and his numbers really haven't dipped for it. So maybe that's a reason for a little bit of optimism. But at the same time, you know, he had a back injury last year. He's had some nagging style injuries. He played the outfield earlier in his career. That's certainly not going to happen anymore. And the field of first baseman has passed him, meaning that he reminds me a little bit. I'm going to make a comparison you're not expecting to Mike Napoli. Like, okay, Mike Napoli's got 22 home runs. Well, that's great and well and good, but almost all the first basemen that you're playing have at least 20 home runs. So the fact that he has 17 home runs, great. If he moves to Yankee Stadium, I get it. That would be exciting because that, you know, that left field, that porch in right field, you know, boosts any left-handed hitter. But the point of the matter is that while he has made like some little mini steps, a bunch of first basemen have made big steps. So in actuality, his value compared to the first baseman field has gone down. I mean, I don't think anybody would take Lucas Duda over Justin Smoke for next year now. And everybody would have taken Duda over Smoke, you know, before the back injury last year. And so I think there's kind of a few different things going on. I get the excitement if it's in Yankee Stadium, but I don't think he's somebody that you want as your starting first baseman next year. Even if he's in Yankee Stadium, I don't think I would be all that excited. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think, Chuck, you just stole my point that I was going to get to, which is the fact that in spite of the fact that you got him for virtually absolutely nothing on draft day, more than likely you picked up Lucas Duda off the waiver wire in the majority of mixed leagues, and he has delivered virtually what you would have wanted him for because of the change in what we're seeing in terms of an era and a juice ball. It's not really helping you too much. So I would love to see him move over to the AL and move over to the Yankee Stadium because I think that would, one, be a fantastic fit for him, but two, it would be nice to actually get some added talent into the AL pool because I'm mostly in AL-only leagues this year in terms of mono leagues, and I'm really tired of seeing all these guys go over to the National League. But I don't think he is super interesting except for maybe as an injury fill-in or AL only. So, yeah, I agree with both you guys. Let's finish up with Nomar Mazara. Mazara was a hot prospect that broke onto the scene last year and has been struggling pretty mightily as of late. So, Jeff, what are your thoughts on Nomar Mazara?
He's a tough one to kind of pin down. I think a lot of people had higher expectations from him, but he's 22 right now. I mean, I think there's a lot to grow. I kind of think he may have been advanced a little too fast. I think people were probably hoping there'd be a little bit more averaged with him. And even on the power, but I mean, it's just a lot of rookies. Prospects that are still 22, you know, that haven't been called up yet. And so I think there's some growth there, but I just think people have probably really soured on him. That he's actually someone for next year I would probably – I don't know if I'll count on him for a position, but I would have no problems taking him on my reserve bench, and I wouldn't be surprised one bit if he hit 30, 35 home runs, finally get some power at some point. It may be a little bit early at 23, but he's still – I mean, we'll be 23 next year. But he's still a guy – I just think he's too young, and we haven't seen the production that I'm not going to count on him, but – he's someone that could easily break out at some point in the future.
Chuck, what are your thoughts? Chuck, are you on mute?
Well, I am not on mute. He had three hits last night, but he won seven contests in a row without a hit before that. And he hasn't hit a home run since way back on the 7th of this month. So he is definitely scuffling along. I think we have a tendency to look at the age of a player and assume that when he gets called up young, that means he's going to be a superstar at a certain rate. And that just doesn't always play out that way. And I'll use Elvis Andrus as the poster boy for this, because remember way back when he took Michael Young's position and everybody freaked out, and he really wasn't all that good of a player for multiple years, and now all of a sudden he's vaulted himself into the conversation of being a top 10, maybe even a top 6 shortstop. And Mazzara is a guy that I think needs a little more time to incubate, to be honest with you. I'm not excited about what I see in his, the 20% K rate with only 12 home runs, is not great. The 39 runs isn't great. The 2 stolen bases isn't great. I mean, I do think he's a valuable major league commodity going forward, but I wouldn't want to be betting the farm on when his coming of age season is going to be. Now, I do think Jeff makes an interesting point. If he's somebody that you can grab as your 5th outfielder, or somebody you can grab in reserve drafts next year and just sort of see how it goes, hey, I'm all in. But if he's somebody that people are still getting excited about because he plays in Texas and because he's only going to be, going into his age 23 season, then they can have at her. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, I think this is one. I think what you guys mentioned in terms of him being young, and I think the fantasy industry as a whole is pretty reactionary when it comes to players in general, but especially young players. So I do think that this is a guy who could be kind of a little bit of a post-hype sleeper. Just kind of looking at his numbers, he does remind me a little bit of what we were talking about, or what you were talking about, Chuck, with Lucas Duda, in terms of, one, he probably should be a platoon bat at this point in his career. I mean, he's currently, I had his platoon numbers up. He's currently batting 175 against left-handed pitching, and because the Rangers have dealt with so many injuries, they haven't necessarily really had the opportunity to really platoon him. He's hit against lefties in 38 games. He's only got one home run hit in 175 against them. And I think that there is going to be some growth, and I think sometimes we forget that growth on young players isn't always linear. And so I think a lot of people, including myself, because I've been a big Mazzara guy since before he was called up, thought that this would be a very big year for him. But the fact that he hasn't yet hit for the kind of power we're hoping he will hit for one day, and we've seen a huge shift in the amount of people who are hitting for power, makes his numbers look even worse. I think coming into next season, he is a guy I'm definitely going to buy for this year. I think he is borderline cuttable in 15-team leagues. I think he needs an offseason to kind of readjust and do things, and I think the Rangers may need to bring someone in to platoon with him a little bit more often. All right. That is going to wrap us up for this episode. Jeff, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Definitely. Remind people again where you can reach on social media and then plug all your work.
I'm on Twitter at Jeff W. Zimmerman. And right now I'm writing at Rotographs and at RotoWire.
All right, Chuck, where can we reach you and what are you working on?
I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter. And I'm doing the Of Note column, which goes up at Friends with Fantasy Benefits every week. And, Justin, I just took Cody Bellinger in a 3-sport draft, and you're up. So you'll have something to do after this draft is over.
Oh, well, I've already taken a baseball player, so that one doesn't bother me as much.
It's my first one, by the way. Baseball player.
In a league where everybody's loading up on basketball and football, in my first 7 picks, I've already taken Mike Trout, Trey Turner, and Paul Goldschmidt. So my baseball team is looking pretty good for next year.
Quite true. Quite true, my friend.
You reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Please give us a rate and review. If it's of the five-star variety, it'll get you entered to win in some free Friends of Fantasy Benefits swag. We'll be giving away all season long. You can read all my stuff over at Fangraphs Fantasy Side, which is Rotographs, where I write 4 to 5 days a week, or 4 to 5 times a week. And then you can hear me on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Thursdays 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, 6 to 8 Pacific, on the Tout Wars Hour with Laura Michaels. And I think this week our guest is Rotographs dude and overlord Paul Spohr. So definitely come and check that out as we talk about trades and other things happening in the fantasy baseball landscape. That is going to wrap us up for this episode. For Jeff, Chuck, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.